Well, it's time for Candid Frank Live one more time.
Wow
was right. Well, what an interesting week this is. Well, finally it's out. That's right. The CFL schedule has worked its way into the open light of day. Thank you very much. Now, out of protest for it taking so long, I'm not looking at it until tomorrow. And then I'll start circling the dates in my calendar to make sure that I'm free those days since I already bought the tickets. And I noticed one thing I have to share with you guys, which I think is so cool. It is really so cool. I really find it to be very, very awesome. The Argos are going to play. Are you ready for this? At U of T. Can you imagine? Over 50 years they played in that stadium. And now they find themselves back there for a preseason game against Winnipeg. Actually, we'll find ourselves there for a preseason game in Winnipeg. It makes me extremely happy to know that we'll be outdoors. There have been some people who have mentioned that maybe we shouldn't leave. Maybe Argo fans and the team should stay at Varsity Stadium. I did a few U of T football games there when I was a play-by-play guy back in the day. I did soccer there. I did men's and women's soccer, for that matter. Football. I did the National Soccer League there. Toronto Italia. The Toronto Blizzard. So, yeah, I know the stadium. In fact, to take it full circle, so we end up back here at the Argos. My cousin Baby saw me there one time when I was doing the play-by-play for the U of T Blues because she went there. And she said, "What are you doing here?" "Nothing. Just hanging. So it was a real fun experience being at that stadium. And I believe they've renovated it since. I haven't had occasion to go back there, so I guess, you know, it's important to note that it should be a lot of fun. I can't see it, seating about 18,000 people maybe, if it does that? I really don't know. That's a question that I need to answer. And at some point, I guess I will answer that question. Anyway, tonight's a very interesting show, as I said. You know, we've got ourselves a new schedule. And I'm very nervous. I'm going to do an interview that has made me nervous. I am extremely nervous about this next interview that I'll be doing. The reason I'm nervous is because in life, when you become a parent, everything your child does is awesome. You know, the first time they fill that diaper, not to gross you out, but if you're a parent, you know what I mean. First time they fill that diaper, the first time they stand up on their own, the first time they walk to you, the first time they say mama, dada. It's just a thrill being a parent. The simple things in life are made by parenting that much stronger and better. So the question I have is, what happens if you have a child? And a child becomes really good at stuff. Like not just standing up, walking, you know, loading a diaper, but pounding the crap out of the opposition to the point where they force that opposition to submit to their will, which is to win a major championship. Our guests tonight are Annette and Paul Pottinger. Their son is a linebacker for the Toronto Argonauts. His name is Jason Pottinger. He's a champion, as you all know. The 100th Grey Cup was won by the Toronto Argonauts here in Toronto. And it is with the deepest, I mean the deepest respect, that I would like to bring these two wonderful people on for the purpose of sharing with us, if you will, the road to the Grey Cup. Now, you guys are both there right now, right? Annette?
Hello, Frank.
Yeah, hi, Frank.
And Paul, how you doing, guys?
Good, thanks.
Good, thank you.
Now, this wasn't a cold phone call to Paul Pottinger. It was more of a cold phone call to Annette Pottinger because I had never spoken to Annette, but we're buddies on Twitter, if you can call it that. And Annette is teaching me how to use Twitter. Thank you,
Annette. Well, I'm not that good at Twitter myself yet, but okay.
So, Paul, we had a long conversation at a wonderful event that most Canadian Football League players, in fact, the large majority, take part in. They do a lot of work in the community. In this case, we met at the Sick Kids, Big Kiss, Adriano Belli.
Belli, yes, sir. Yeah.
And we had a nice conversation. I was really impressed with you, impressed especially because of your pride in your son. But you are very calm and cool about it. You're not, you know, you're not, there's not any bravado about it, right? So I'm very happy to talk to both of you. I guess I'll let you guys decide who does the talk, and I'll just ask the question. Here's the first question. When did your son first develop a real desire to play football?
Annette, you want me to answer that?
Sure, go ahead.
Yeah, because I can remember the very moment. I can replay it over my head. When basically, Jason has an older brother, Matthew, and Matthew was the first to start into the football sport, and Jason would be playing on the swings and running around on the sidelines while his older brother played with the Oshawa Hawkeyes here in Oshawa. And I remember standing by the play area that they had at the Civic Field here, and him tugging on my leg, saying, Dad, when do I get to play football? I want to play football. I said, you want to play football like Matthew? And, emphatically, yeah. He'd be watching all the time. But I said, okay, next year you're not old enough, but next year we'll put you in. And he's never looked back since. He's played football since he was pretty much 8 years old and never stopped.
Annette, this is a question for you. When I was playing hockey at St. Mike's, this is embarrassing to admit. And by the way, we're not going to embarrass Jason. He's too big. I don't want to get him upset. When I was playing hockey at St. Mike's at a tender age, my mother sewed a cushion into my seat of my hockey pants because she was afraid I would hurt my butt. How worried were you about your son playing such a physical game?
Well, I wasn't happy about it, but he's a boy, and I mean, he was constantly, you know, falling and had stitches several times, and so I was used to all that, and I was like, well, you know, if he wants to go out and do it, he's going to go out and do it. And I didn't really try to worry about it too much. I worry about it more now in the professional sport. I'm always worried that, you know, he's going to get hurt, which he has, of course, several times. But you just try not to think about it and just enjoy watching them play.
Yeah, it has to be a concern. And one of the reasons why I don't take any satisfaction in when I see a player either on the opposition or even on the team that I'm rooting for getting hurt. I spent a lot of time watching mothers and fathers on, you know, in the stands when they're it is scary. But, you know, it's that scariness that we all need to get over. It's like that first time he gets up on the bicycle, right? You can only protect your children so much. And football's not that dangerous a game. Can you attest to that? Or?
It can be pretty dangerous. I mean, and you worry about concussions. That's my biggest worry. I mean, like, you can always heal broken bones and things like that, but concussions can be a real concern. But like I say, I feel for every player that goes down because I know how their mother or their wives are feeling. And, yeah, you just, every game you just go and you just, if he walks off the field and he's fine, then I'm happy.
And that's great. Now, on a positive sense, what kind of changes do you think, as a mother, and I guess then Paul, how do you think football helped mold and shape your son at a young age?
I can't emphasize how grateful I am to the people, even not so much the game itself, but the people around the game, the coaches, you know, the support people, right from, you know, when he was in Adam, right on up. We met so many people that have been, I would say, a great positive influence. Around the game of football, it seems to draw a certain type of character. And from coaches and, you know, people even involved at executive level, we've met so many outstanding people that you're happy to have these kind of people in your children's life. They were great influences. You know, some of the coaches before high school, when Jay's playing at a very young age, some of them from the police force in Toronto involved. Greg Crabb, a great head coach, I remember. What you see is this influence that instills respect, number one, respect for both your coaches, for your teammates, for yourself, and it was in, you could see it instilling itself over the years in my son's character. University level, again, coaches, they taught them to become from young boys into young men, and that's what I saw as a parent and as a fan. You just were kind of standing back and taking that all in. So a positive experience throughout, and I can't think of any negative influence from the people I've seen around this game of football.
You know, we always talk about leadership. And we forget sometimes that leaders are taught to be leaders. I guess that's what you're getting at. And the fine people that many of them are volunteers because it is what it is, right? It's sports. And none of them really get paid. And especially in football, I don't think you have the same level of coaching financial support that they have in, let's say, the MTHL or the GTL, they call it now. It isn't the same in football, is it?
No. There's a lot of volunteer time, fundraisers. It's definitely you can tell these people are in it because they have a passion. They're involved with young people and with the sport because they have a passion for both. Both Annette and I, we're grateful to have seen our son get involved in the sport and be involved with the people surrounding that sport, both at a very recreational level when he started, right on up through as university, and now at pro level. University years were were ones that we enjoyed phenomenally, his years at McMaster and the people that we were able to meet and get to know and have remained friends with many.
Now, let's talk about that. Now, I'll go back to you again, Annette. Your son has an option, an opportunity. He gets a scholarship to British Columbia.
Correct, yeah.
And but your son, being a real family lad, doesn't really want to go there. Instead, he opts to pay for his education, obviously work towards paying for his education, and go to McMaster.
That's right, yeah.
Explain how unselfish your son was at that time, because to me that is totally unselfish, because I can't think of a young man not wanting to leave home and have somebody take care of them in a faraway place.
Well, he had already been going to the different universities around in Ontario, and the different coaches were talking to him about coming to McMaster, and he'd been to McMaster, and he met Ray Mayhews and Mike Botterall and the players that were playing there at that time, and he loved the whole organization there. And of course, it's like an hour away from us, so it's pretty close to home. And like say, he could have gone to Simon Fraser. They wanted him to go there, but he said, you know, I'd really like to stay here where you can come and watch me play my games. I feel really comfortable there. Like, he loved the coaches were amazing there.
Yeah.
And his teammates, and they were, like, I think that's why the team was played so well when he was there, because they were all, like, good friends. They cared about each other, and they're all still good friends to this day. So, and we were happy, like, because we could experience the whole thing, go to all his games. And that was our whole, every fall, that was our whole recreational schedule, was where we go every Saturday for a game. And like you say, it was true football, because they were playing because they loved it, not for the money or anything else. It was a great experience. I'm happy that because of him we could share in it. I never even realized that world was out there before he got involved in it. So he's taught us a lot about things in life as well. So,
well, you know, so he stays and he goes to McMaster. And he plays for McMaster. He ends up being a first-round draft choice. And wouldn't you know it, he gets drafted by the BC Lions. It's like British Columbia
exactly. Kept
calling him, didn't they?
Very ironic, yeah. We were like, oh, that's so far away. But it was a good experience for him. So.
Yeah, he loved the years at McMaster. And what better place to push off to once leaving university and going into professional football and to go and play for Mr. Buono, Coach Buono.
Yep.
And in a beautiful, one of the most beautiful spots on this planet, I'd say Vancouver.
Yeah, and the guy's traveling out there too. We'd never be out west, and of course we went out there several times to watch him play, so we saw a lot of Canada.
But the first time was the most interesting time you went. He was playing his first game in British Columbia. It was going to be the first time you weren't going to see him play because it wasn't on television. Tell us about that.
Exactly. Yeah, I remember going into work that morning, and Annette called me at about 9 a.m. and said, guess what? Jay's going to be playing tonight at BC Place, and you know, he's going to be out there on the field. I said, well, what do you think? He said, well, let's go. So, you know, I went to my boss and said, I got to go to Vancouver. I got to be there tonight. And
we had no hotel room. We don't know where we're going to stay.
Hey.
It was the height of tourist season. Everything's booked up, but we were all worked out. We got a room, and we watched him his first play in the CFL, so it was good, yeah.
Do me a favor, guys. Say hello to Kevin Garubio. He's one of our new co-hosts. Kevin, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Hey, Kevin, how you doing? Kevin, we're if you haven't caught on yet, we're talking to Jason Possinger's parents, Annette and Paul.
Yeah.
And Kevin is
hello,
a
Kevin.
Big.
Hi, Kevin.
Hello.
Hi, how are you all doing?
Good.
Good, thank you.
So, Kevin, you're a big CIS fan, correct?
Oh, huge. Diehards.
Okay. Now, here's your opportunity. You got two parents who had a son who could have played in BC, opted for McMaster. Coincidentally, not to rub it in, the Laval defeated McMaster this year in the Vanier Cup. After this,
but what a game that was in 2011.
Oh, that was a great year. Yeah.
Have you ever watched a football game that like that one?
Unfortunately, I'm an Acadia supporter. I played ball at Acadia. So we were got in the way of both teams, it seems, over the last 2 years, McMaster and Laval.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, yes.
Do you have a question in regards to CIS, the CIS experience for parents? So they, if you didn't gather, he had a scholarship in BC but decided to play for McMaster. Both teams are great teams in football.
How would you, just thinking about it, How would you weigh your options? Say if they went to UBC, would you have tried to go there as many times? Did you allot finances to see him play, or would you have waited for him to come to the closest game, I guess, would be Winnipeg?
Annette, well, you know, you're trying to put your child through university, help him out as much as you can. Finances being what they are,
two other kids are going through school.
Two others.
At the same time.
I think we would have missed a few games.
Yeah.
Quite a few.
I know from my parents' experience, I'm from Ontario as well. They'd have to wait to go to Quebec, and hopefully maybe they'd be able to stream a game or two online through
right.
Just on the Internet.
That's
yeah,
be difficult.
Exactly. We'd use any other means possible to watch. You know, whether it be RDS or, you know, the score had, you know, the university rushed for the OUA, but I'm not sure if there were anything that we could have.
It's much better now, I noticed,
yeah.
Broadcasting the university games than when Jay first started. They were just getting into that, and it's grown from there. So
let's move on to bigger and better things. So
yeah.
Now here's your son. He is a top flight CIS prospect, which means that he is going to be drafted pretty high. So now he ends up drafted in BC. Now to go see the first game, as you said, you went there. Then a strange thing happens. He gets traded to Toronto. Tell us what was in your mind when that happened.
We were ecstatic.
Pure elation. You know, eventually, as a young player, with both high school, university. I mean, before he ever picked up a football, he's probably watching an Argo game with me on TV, or we'd be down at the Dome watching the game. Watching the Argos do their thing, and Jay's going to be an Argo? Wow.
That's what we kept hoping from when he first got drafted
yeah.
to BC. We're like, well, maybe you can come back this way eventually. So.
And he did.
Yeah. Beyond our wildest dreams. It's to see him playing on the team we've grown up around and watching here in Toronto. I can't put it in words.
I tell you, I'm going to make it even harder for you to put stuff in words. So now, here he is, he's playing for Toronto. The team, let's just say when he came here, didn't go off to a flying start with him on the team. They had a few problems. Then they bring in Jim Barker. Then they bring in Milanovic this year. And then we're there at the end of November playing the Calgary Stampeders, and your son is part of the winning team of the 100th Grey Cup at home. That must have been a thrill. Tell us how that felt.
Annette?
Well, it still hasn't really sunk in, but, just to, like at the beginning of the season, to think that would happen, it seemed like so far out of reach, but it was an incredible experience. And like my sister was there, and we went down on the field with the master, and you know, we could hug him and congratulate him, and you know, his girlfriend and her family were there, and it was so great. We could experience it with them and everything. You know, we went to the parade after and all the things that go with it. So yeah, it was just a perfect dream year. So
how about you,
Paul?
Yeah,
all the pieces of the puzzle fell into place. You know, when you're looking at all those pieces scattered on the table, you know, the players have been trades and acquisitions. You know, the team had been building. Coach Barker, at the time when he came in, you know, you started seeing things culminating into the team making those improvements that going to make them a Grey Cup contender. And you're wondering, wow, could it really actually happen? We're hosting the 100th Grey Cup here in Toronto, and my son's on this team. And could it really happen? And yeah, you know what? Until we see that championship ring on his finger, I think that's the moment it's really going to sink in. It still seems like we dreamt it all.
Yeah, you can't help but feel that way, Paul.
It really is surreal.
Well, you know, imagine now I'm just a fan. You know, I'm just somebody who enjoys the city of Toronto. I was born and raised here. I'm thrilled. I'm thrilled because here's this party in Toronto that everyone's talking about, and my team is participating in the game. You know, in your case, not only is it happening in your city, or your greater Toronto area, if you will. I don't mean to bring Ajax into Toronto, but you know what I mean. It's happening in your community. Everybody knows who the Argonauts are. Everybody's talking about the Argonauts, and then they turn around and win. And then whoever's left that didn't mention the Toronto Argonauts—I mean, media, radio, television, actors, singers—everybody started talking about the Toronto Argonauts. I can't imagine how taken aback you guys were.
It's you know, when we went downtown for the parade, and you saw the people turn out on Bay Street and up at City Hall, and you know, all the team going by on the floats or on the trucks, and everyone celebrating, and you know, the traditional Argo call going up in the air over and over again, and
Argo,
that Grey Cup being raised up in front of everyone. It's you know, when you think back over the years of watching the Argos since the 2004 championship, and I mean, it's been a journey as a fan, and for us as parents, to see, you know, this occur with our son as part of the team contributing to that championship is something that we'll cherish. Those memories we'll have for the rest of our lives, and hopefully one day I can hand one of my grandkids a 100th Grey Cup loonie, you know, tell them, hey, Your dad was part of that.
Yeah.
I look forward to that.
you have to be very proud, and you have every right to be proud. And let me tell you, I have said this over and over again, and I say it. I would not be involved in this if I didn't believe this from the bottom of my heart. I have done a lot of sport, and back in the day, I did a lot of sports, ran into a lot of athletes. I'm talking Blue Jays, Maple Leafs. At the time, the basketball team was the Toronto Tornadoes, lacrosse teams, soccer teams, Blizzard, everybody. But I have never met a nicer bunch of players than the CFL has. And I open that past and beyond the Toronto Argonauts. They are really a humble, you know, they're all very nice. And I refer to them as young men now that I'm almost 60.
Yes.
So they're all young compared to me. But they're all men I would be proud to call son. You know, they're all wonderful men. And both you parents should be very proud of Jason. He has brought a lot of pride to the city of Toronto. He's made a giant contribution to that. And I hope you can tell him how grateful we, the fans of the Argonauts, are. And I am so glad to have taken this time with you guys. And I apologize for being on longer with you. I was on 10 minutes longer than we should have been. We said only 15. It ended up about 25.
Yeah.
But
thank you, Frank.
It was
a pleasure to share those memories and those thoughts with you.
And Paul, we're going to have another glass of wine and talk CFL again.
Very much so. Let's do it.
It was great talking with you. So.
Thank you very much.
Look forward to it.
Bye.
Thank you, Frank. Bye now.
Bye.
Well, Kevin, nice to meet you, by the way.
Nice meeting you, too. That was a great piece right there. It's nice to see the parents' perspective at all, especially going through the CFL turmoil where everyone knows Canadians kind of get treated a bit like cannon fodder, and getting the parent experience is a view that I don't think many people see. They just see the athlete, and they don't see the person or the human or the family that's involved.
Well, that's the intention of this program. I've stated it from the beginning. And no one's going to change that. It's a part of what I am. It is what is me, and this is what it has to be if I'm going to be involved. Because anybody, Kevin, can do a sports show and talk about the score and talk about how much better this player is than that player. And a lot of people can talk about who's going to win and who isn't going to win. But I want to talk about the people that make this sport, and you're one of those people. Please help us to understand. Thanks to Jason. Jason has been kind enough to hook us up together to have you on here to talk CIS, which is Canadian Inter-University Sports. Tell us a bit about yourself and your experience so the people understand who's talking on the radio, if you will, on the blog radio show.
Well, I played at Acadia for 5 years up until they decided to start winning championships. So I missed the last two AUS championships. Now I'm just trying to get involved a bit in the media, writing a bit for the CISblog.ca, as well as working for Jason as a host for their CIS podcast on Rouge Radio during the season. So just following along, and I feel that it's such a great brand of football, Canadian football, professional, amateur, all the way down, grassroots, CJFL, all the way going down. And I feel it doesn't get enough attention, and I love that this idea of bringing attention to Canadian football, because it is truly Canadian in every sense of it. And then we have the Grey Cup, which is exciting, the Vanier Cup, which this year was still a great game up until the fourth quarter, the year before one of the greatest games ever. So it's a great game, and I feel it needs more attention.
Well, that's what we're here for. My intention is to build something like a network. And by that I mean, rather than do the same show 3 days, we try doing something different. And today is Canadian football. Wednesday is Canadian football, all the way. It's all about Canadian football. The Toronto Argonauts are central to this. On Mondays we do background stuff. We're working towards getting authors and stuff like that, and retired players, alumni guys. And on Friday, we expand our horizon to the Toronto Rock and the Hamilton Tiger Cats and whatever else anybody else wants to talk about. But you're here today because of the CIS, and that's something we want to add on Wednesdays. That is why we expanded, as Jason knows, Jason Sperling, we expanded to the two-hour format. The two-hour format is to allow us the opportunity to have a night about Canadian football. So now you played for Acadia. Tell us the highlights. Now we know that McMaster lost to Lavelle. You can review that game for us. For those of us that didn't have a chance to see it, review that game, encapsulize what happened on that day.
Well, it started off so well, but you play against Lavelle, and it just seems that you need to have a big lead at the half. If we flash back a year before, McMaster beat Lavelle. They were up 21-0. Lavelle still has the guns to come back and take it all the way to overtime in a fantastic game. The year later, McMaster's up 7 points. Lavelle squanders a scoring possession at the end of the first half. Everyone remembers that clock issue that the quarterback had, the coaching staff, which is just untypical of Lavelle. And they still come back and roll to another win. The thing with Lavelle is that you have to get a lead on them because at halftime, they have better coaches than everyone else in the country, and we saw that time, and we just saw the greatness that is Laval. But we also saw some special things with McMaster again, as I think Kyle Quinlan, the quarterback for McMaster, Heck Creighton winner, we saw him, his first adversity, and I think he stood pretty well, seeing as he was getting hit all game, and we're going to see him move on to greater things in the CFL.
Yes, and he now has moved on to the Montreal Alouettes, has he not?
Yes, he's with the Montreal Alouettes now. I think he signed last year, and they sent him back just for some more seasoning, and I think this year he might have a legit shot to make the dress roster.
Well, he's going to have a really good teacher, isn't he? Two really good teachers.
Well, he has Anthony Calvillo, who's going to really help him along, and they're just learning from him and just getting reps and watching him and taking it from him. I think that he's going to be the next – he has the greatest chance to be the next Canadian quarterback. And
Since when? Since when? It's been a while, has it not? Russ Jackson? No, I'm just kidding.
But seriously, Russ Jackson's the one I really think of when you think of great quarterbacks is Russ Jackson's last great Canadian quarterback. We have people who have had chances in the past, but really no one's really seized the opportunity to import rules and that the quarterback position is not affected by the import rule.
Yeah, I don't know whether it's I guess it's the background, it's the training, and I guess the knock is that CIS is not enough of an experience to teach a pro quarterback. But you know, I think it'll happen someday, and hopefully very soon. Like you, I'm hoping so as well. I'm hoping he has a lot of success, except against the Argonauts. Oops, did I show my fan side? Oh, I didn't mean to do that. That's just...
Well, I'm an Alouettes fan.
There you go.
I'm showing some success for them. It'd be really nice to see, especially since the Alouettes have really gone out and tried to grab Canadian quarterbacks, especially last year they brought in Kyle Graves as well, the Acadia quarterback. They grabbed quarterbacks from around the queue and brought them in for seasoning because they saw what you were saying, that the CIS doesn't have, I guess, the coaching yet for the quarterback position to build them up to that professional level. So they went out and were proactive with a grassroots movement to build up the quarterback position, because how exciting would it be to have a Canadian quarterback in the CFL? We talk so much about the Canadian game and whatnot. Most Canadians think that Doug Flutie's Canadian.
Well, he was here long enough. So help me out with this. Am I sensing that maybe putting in a Canadian quarterback should affect the balance of the import-non-import rule?
Well, the issue is that the three quarterbacks aren't protected, or they could all three be American, while other positions have to have the import rule. The quarterback position isn't affected by that. So most teams obviously are going to take their three quarterbacks are going to be the best player available. Not saying the Canadian might not be, but he might be a little more raw, while the American might be more polished, so they can it's quicker. So if they were more subject to the import rule, they'd be able to get more.
Well,
who played and sat down? Who was a great CIS quarterback as well?
I don't know why they can't have. I guess what I'm trying to say is I'd like the CFL. I'm not against the rules that they have, but it would be nice if they were a little more. If the teams were a little more motivated to have a Canadian quarterback, if there was some sort of, you know, reward for bringing in a Canadian quarterback, other than, as you stated, that the Montreal Alouettes have drawn a few quarterbacks from the queue and are trying to season these quarterbacks that are Canadian boys. You know, other than just out of the kindness of the Alouettes' heart, it would be nice if they were rewarded for it. Not that I'm looking for any advantage for Montreal, but to be fair, you know what I'm saying?
Well, the Argonauts brought in Danny Branigan from Queens, and he was a great quarterback, but he only lasted a year, and he was gone. Tommy Dennison from Queens, I believe, had a bit of a cup of coffee in Winnipeg, and they sent him away. And these are two great quarterbacks in the CIS. Dennison set a whole whack of records at Queens. Branigan won the Vanier Cup for Queens. So these are great players. Brad Sinopoli, everyone said, was the best Canadian quarterback ever until Quinlan came around and started smashing records as well. So we see this talent coming up through the CIS, and obviously the quarterback position seeing it get to that level of CFL talent. And that's not me saying that, I guess, from the coach's eyes. But the fact that quarterbacks are at least getting shots now, is at least we're seeing a step forward. Maples were changed. You're bringing more. Every team brings in players from Prince or from the where they're located. Say Manitoba brought in players from the CJFL teams or brought in players from the Bisons and what's not around to kind of build up the grassroots level and build up that quarterback position, because obviously they need more coaching to get to that level where we could start seeing some CFL Canadian quarterbacks.
Absolutely. Now, we've had a chance to – I've controlled the conversation. Now I'd like you to control the conversation, and I assume we're going to move away from the Canadian Football League and get more interested, and let's discuss the CIS at whatever level and to whatever depth you wish to. Tell me about the CIS.
Right now, hockey, football – there's so many coaching changes right now this offseason. It's been exciting from that standpoint, and we really haven't seen that so much. And what's really interesting is we're CIS coaches from the professional ranks looking down in, and we're seeing this with Coach Baresi getting pulled from was the Edmonton Eskimos running backs coach. Now he's the head coach at Ottawa. We have Marcelo Simmons getting pulled from the Eskimos, as who was a DB coach. Now he's the defensive coordinator at St. Mary's, and so on and so forth. We're seeing more of coaches leaving the CFL ranks and coming down. And it's interesting to see that. Even Joe Paopao recently is no longer the interim head coach at Waterloo. He's full-on head coach of the Waterloo Warrior football program.
Let's take a short break. When we come back, we'll continue our conversation. I'm also going to try and correct your audio, all right? And that's going to require you to hang up, and I'm going to try and phone while we're away. And then we'll hook up again, and we'll see if we can get a better connection with you. Does that
perfect.
Sound okay to you?
Yes, it sounds great.
I've written down your phone number. I hope it's the right one that's there. We'll go for a break. We'll be back, hopefully, with a better connected Kevin Garbullo, and I am saying your name right, right?
Yep, Garbullo.
Okay, good. So Kevin will be back with me after these two short breaks, okay? Thanks.
The following is a message from the 2012 Grey Cup champions, your Toronto Argonauts. If you didn't hear your voice, there's still time to be a part of next year's crowd. It's okay to pile on. Get your 2013 season tickets today. Call 416-341-ARGO or go to argonauts.ca.
ARGO!
This call could not be completed because you're trying to reach a Skype user.
Want to be heard, disagreed with, or just plain shot down? Come on! Be brave! Call the Candid Frank Live Show, a.k.a. the CFL Show. You already hit the link to bring up the player, and you hit the play button so you can hear us. Now hit that little Skype button on that Candid Live player sitting there, like your pet wanting a snack, so to connect with us and tell us your thoughts. Hit that little tiny, cute, and tempting Skype button, right? Now, do it! Or call 714-242-5250. That's 714-242-5250. Well, all right. Well, that plan didn't work. Go ahead, Kevin. Give us a call back on Skype, and we'll just have to live with the quality of sound that's there. I was trying to do something better. Sorry, Kevin, to have wasted your time.
Oh, no worries.
I want to hear what you're saying, and I want the people to hear what you're saying. You have a lot of good things to talk about, and I want to make sure that you're heard as well as you can be heard. So anyway, so we talked about quarterbacks. We talked about coaches. There's been a carousel of coaching changes within the CIS. I noticed in most of the changes, at least a large size of them, they're experienced in CIS football. They're not just people out of who understand the school programs at CIS.
Well, I agree with that fully. We're seeing teams really trying their best to get football people, people who are going to try and play the Canadian game. We've seen Ottawa, again, they just hired Coach Peressi last year, bringing in Coach Echeverry, who came in and, for whatever reason, this guy did have success in the CFL, in the Canadian game, losing in the Grey Cup, unfortunately, on that too many men on the field play against the Alouettes. He comes down with CIS and takes a team that 2 years ago was a field goal away from going to the national semis. The year later, losing to Windsor because Austin Kennedy, quarterback, just went off against them in a great upset, to taking a team that could have contended against McMaster and going, just dismantling the season because he tried to try and play more of American offense, the Veer, whatever you want to call the Veer offense, an old school offense, and not understanding how it tailors the Canadian game. We're seeing coaches really going out right now, or schools going out right now, getting coaches who have had success in the CIS or have a great understanding of Canadian amateur football. And we see this with Carleton going out and getting a winner, Steve Samara. And we don't know why SMU ever fired him, but Carleton went out and made sure to get him. We see Ottawa now getting a coach who has a Canadian background on offense. And we're seeing teams like Laurier going out and getting a young football mind like Michael Falls from York and bringing him in as the head coach.
Okay, so now coaching. We've touched that. Now, the players help us to understand as best you can, and I know this probably might be an unfair question. Explain to us the bridge from minor football to college or university football. Where are the players coming from that make it to university?
Well, if we're going to just go in terms of location, I was talking to Donovan Bennett once on Rouge Radio, and what he said was fantastic. I didn't even think of this, was the teams that are successful right now in CIS football are either recruiting the top players out of Quebec, where we're seeing Laval just destroying the Sagejet programs, taking the best players, getting the best of the best every year, or the teams that are getting the best players from the Golden Horseshoe, Toronto area. The teams that can pull that talent, that young 18-year-old talent, and have a great coaching staff that can develop 18-year-olds into great 22, 23-year-olds are the teams that are the most successful.
Now,
teams that are not that successful at developing talent are struggling.
So why then that begs the question, what makes, we all know that Quebec has made large strides in football, in the Canadian Football League, but football in general. Let's forget the Canadian Football League. Let's talk about football alone. Quebec has made major strides in developing football players. What do you think is the main reason for that? Since you're from that community, tell us what it is that makes Quebec such a strong producer of football players.
Quebec is producing talent right now because that Sagejet program is just giving an extra 2 years for a player to really develop. Instead of having a great high school player who might have developed faster than everyone else and just came out 18, he's stronger, bigger, faster, stronger, and the other players in his league haven't really developed yet or matured as quickly as him, they come in and sometimes bust. In Sagejet, say that great high school talent in Quebec goes into that next level and he's on the same playing field, and if he excels in that league, you know he's going to excel at the next level because he's already became a man, and now you get a 21-year-old who's ready to just come out and start playing football, and he's performed, he's lived on his own, he's just ready, he's mature. While we're seeing other places, here where I'm in Nova Scotia right now, I'm still at Acadia, they're starting to get there, but players who are coming out of this area don't really have that level of competition, that high-end competition. So we don't see as many great talents. Sure, we have Jesse Mills and Adre Frazier. Jesse Mills is now the quarterback at Carleton, and Adre Frazier, who is the kick returner this year for the Guelph Griffins. But not so much that competition that allows the players to get better and the whole league get lifted up. And Sagejet's having that right now. In Ontario, it's starting to get better because the OVFL is such a strong league in the summer, and the best of the best are going at each other. And other provinces are slow to get to that, and they are getting to it, and we'll see how it evolves over the next 10, 15 years.
So for a layman, the way I would describe what you've described, if for me to ensure that I understand what we're talking about, basically what we're talking about is we're talking about, imagine if we took high school out of the equation and went from junior high to university without high school.
Mm-hmm.
So there's that middle part where there's that development when the body is finally catching up, you know, to being fully developed, but not being put up against ones that have already been developed for a long time, so that you have more of an easy transition for that group.
Exactly. They don't really face that adversity that, say, the Quebec football players would have when they're playing in Sagec. So
yeah.
We really see that survival of the fittest, the cream rising to the top, and we see Laval and getting those players, and they're pulling the best talent out of Sagec. And we see NCAA teams pulling teams out of Sagec as well, or players out of Sagec. So I think that competition and that level of maturity they are when they leave creates a better football player. So you're having 21-year-old freshmen who are out of Sagec, as opposed to teams in Ontario having to go with 18, 19-year-olds and Nova Scotia pulling out 18, 19-year-olds. And that's probably why the AUS is so weak right now, is there's not a lot of talent to pull out of locally, while OUA, whoever wins that Golden Horseshoe, which Western and McMaster have been great lately, and Laval has been destroying Quebec, and out west, Calgary's getting the best of the best. So you could point the teams that are recruiting the best to local leagues are doing the greatest, and Acadia is doing the best recruiting in the Atlantic Conference. Unfortunately, their best isn't on the same part as Laval, as we saw in the UTEC Bowl this season.
So then, what do you see? Do you see, when there's, let's face it, when someone's got a good idea, you know, in life, everybody steals it, right?
Mm-hmm.
Do you see a trend where, you know, is it just by numbers, or is there a system that can be applied in the Atlantic side and in outside Calgary in the West?
There's the Laval model, which everyone's switching to. And for those of you who don't know it, Laval has their brand where they are pumping out money, essentially, and which is getting the greatest facilities to develop that talent. They're recruiting the best because of that. And I see Calgary slowly getting to that. You see Calgary starting to pump more money into their program. McMaster's trying to. Western's trying to. The AUS right now can't really get to that point. But the Laval model essentially is turn your team into almost an NCAA team, where you're trying to monetize it. You're trying to profit off of it, and players will want to go there. The feel's better. The atmosphere of the school, the field, the stadium is that much better, and players are going to want to go there. So in terms of that, that'd be the only way adjustment I could see, because no one's really going to pull players out of Quebec aside from Quebec teams. But to pull the best talent around Canada, you need to go to that Laval model of spending money to make money, to win games, to win championships.
But I would refer to it as investing in the players as opposed to spending money.
Yes.
It's more of an investment, because spending money has, to me, it almost sounds like wasting money. It sounds to me like what Quebec is doing is investing in the league, and the return on the investment is the sport is growing, and there's a lot of interest.
I certainly agree with you on that. I certainly agree with that. That's 100% correct. When I was at the UTEC Bowl this year, just doing some reporting and talking to some people around there, Montreal's going to that Laval model, turning to investing into their school, into their team, people from the private sector investing in. People from Sherbrooke are also doing the same with Sherbrooke, and that's why we're seeing those two teams on the rise. But just to put into perspective the difference, so we'll go top of the market right now, Laval, bottom right now is AUS. At Acadia, their budget for their entire sports program is $1 million. That's for every sports team. Now, talking to people at Laval spends on their football program alone $3 million. They've revenue $5 million, profit $2 million. So it is a business-like atmosphere there, but they know that there is money in football in Canada, and they're investing correctly into the atmosphere, the entertainment, the whole setting. Going to a game in Laval is like no other place, and I suggest Canadian football fans, especially those of amateur football, to get to Pep Stadium, or Telestat as it's referred to now, and watch a game, because it's an entirely different universe. It might as well be Canada's version of the SEC.
So basically, what we're going to end up, you know, I'm going to end up having to ask this question, go back to the CFL again. Part of that business model, and I apologize for going back to the CFL, but it begs the question. You know, that investment, the return will be much better if there's a team in Quebec City, no?
If they put a team in Quebec City for the CFL, I think it would really, I think, and Jim Mullen, the great reporter from out west, he brought this up. There was, the way Laval came in, it was a perfect vacuum. As they came in, the Nordiques were leaving. Everyone wanted a team, and they built it up like a professional team. So the fans bought in, everyone bought in. I think Laval would be scared of Quebec City getting a CFL team, because they would kind of steal their thunder. But there's definitely a demand for big-time football in Quebec City, and I think that would be a great place to put a team. And then you get the natural rivalry with the Alouettes, and where's one of the best places in the Eastern Conference to watch games right now? At Molson Stadium, personal stadium. So I agree that there should be a team there. I think it would hurt Laval, but I think it would be great in general for the CFL.
I beg your forgiveness. How far is Laval from Quebec City?
Laval, it's right in there.
So why doesn't Laval get a team?
Oh, Laval University is within Quebec City. So Laval, they probably could put one there at that stadium eventually with all the improvements. I played there my first year, and it was a bit run down. And going there this year, it's an entirely different ballpark. It is an immaculate palace right now for CIS football. And they could probably go partner up with the CFL and the CFL owner and put a team there and share facilities. And it'd probably be one of the best facilities in the entire CFL.
That's what I'm getting at. Because, let's face it, the Alouettes just did that, didn't they? That was
yes.
The biggest change they made.
They share the stadium with McGill, and it'd be interesting to see if that would work in Quebec, or how willing Laval would be in sharing that stadium, or maybe the private sector who pumped their money into Laval would maybe try and partner the two together. And that's entirely me speculating, and I have no idea how it would work. But there's definitely a demand for football in Quebec City. There's definitely a demand in that area. And in Quebec in general, it's a shame that there's only one professional team where that area is pumping out the greatest talent right now in Canada.
Here's thank you for that. Here's the reason why I'm saying it. If I were a Quebecer, if I were a Quebec City resident, I'd want Laval to have their hands on the team rather than somebody totally different. I mean, why would you want to fix something that isn't broken, that in fact hums like crazy? You know what I mean?
Oh, why wouldn't you want the people who know what they're doing, instead of having, say, a Gleiberman come in? you have guys who know what they're doing. You got guys who managed to change the entire game in amateur football, who know how to profit, who know how to build a team, who know how to build an entertainment, a franchise. You go to Laval and it's to go watch a game there, and you have tailgating, you have parties, you have music, you have people singing in the stands. It's a fantastic atmosphere. And why wouldn't that bounce over, say, so we have CIS on Saturday, on Sunday we have this, or Friday, Saturday, whatever it is.
Absolutely.
And I think that would be great, and that's a great idea. And I don't know why they haven't thought of that yet, especially with CFL expansion looming.
Well, in my opinion, I've admitted already that I'm almost 60, so I have a little bit of history when it comes to sports. And if you've got people that know how to run an operation, for God's sakes, go to them. You know, don't start over. If it ain't broke, fix it. And all I've ever heard in the past, I got to say, 4 or 5 years, how wonderful a job Laval has done, how wonderful a job Quebec, the province, is doing with developing football players. So why wouldn't you? Why wouldn't you go with your strength? I don't like the idea as an Argo fan, because that means we're going to be up against a pretty good organization. But you know what? Maybe that'll mean that our Argo organization will get stronger. The whole point is that good football can sell. Bad football doesn't. The last time Ottawa left, and the last time Montreal left, it was because they played bad football. It has nothing to do with the game. It has to do with management. And so they've got to use the best management they can find. I hope you enjoyed my little editorial comment on your part of the show, Kevin.
Well, I agree. Well, I agree with it. I'm glad that I could be the catalyst to motivate you. But
you know what, buddy? I'm already motivated. I see a great sport in Canadian football. I see a sport that can grow. There's room for growth. It's a sport that's been underserved. It's a sport that is underappreciated. There, you know, I live in a city, Toronto, where, you know, it costs $300 and change to go watch a hockey game. A hockey game. You know, I can buy season tickets for that price to watch the Argos. That's not me putting down the Argonauts. That's me telling everyone, listen to what I'm telling you. You can get season tickets to watch a great game, the Canadian football, and it costs the same as watching one game. You know, I mean, to me, as a fan, that only makes sense. To me, Laval, doing what they're doing and being successful the way they are, it's a no-brainer. And I know we agree, and hopefully we'll be talking about the expansion to Quebec at some point, Kevin.
I would think that the expansion to Quebec City would be more viable than the expansion to Moncton or Halifax.
Well, I like the idea of going out that way. I personally, I like the idea of going out that way. From a sporting and from a filling the Canadian map from west to east. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
But in real, and you've convinced me, and listening to you, you've convinced me that maybe it's best to go to Quebec and put the team in the hands of the people who run Laval at this point. That's what I'm thinking at this point.
Well, I was at the UTEC Bowl 2 years ago where McMaster beat Acadia. I went to that game, and that was at Moncton Stadium, University of Moncton, where they do touchdown Atlantic. And that was one of the most poorly attended football games I've seen. It was 3,500 people in a 15,000 seat stadium, completely empty. Unfortunately, TSN decided to put their camera on the opposite side where the fans were sparsely sitting and decided to show an entirely empty side of the field. So it looked even worse on television than it actually was there, but it was bad. And I was just thinking, the attendance for the year before for Touchdown Atlantic didn't sell out. The year before it did, but I was thinking, why not Quebec City? You have a college team that sells out every game, that is the toughest place in Canadian football to play right now, in CIS football to play right now. They're going to host the Vanier Cup this year, and I'm telling you, it is going to be amazing at that venue. I'm excited to see what they do to it to upgrade it, and it's going to be a party there because that is a fun stadium to go to watch a game at. The fans there are nice, they're knowledgeable, and why wouldn't anyone want to go to a game where it's just a great time? Why do people go to Mosaic Stadium? Why do people go to Ivor Wynne? Why do people go to Percival? Those are all exciting places to watch football games because the atmosphere is there. The fans are there. You have the tailgating and everything. And that's there in Quebec City right now. And I don't know why the CFL wouldn't want to move there.
Well, you know what? They could very well make up their mind to do just that. We're going to find out, aren't we?
Oh, yes.
Now, let me ask you. I've got the phone ringing right now. And I have a gentleman who played for the Montreal Alouette. Hopefully he's going to answer the phone. His name is Khalil Carter. And, Do you want to ask him a question or two and then chip off?
Yeah, why not? Just to, we'll see what he has to say about football in Quebec. Because it's a very interesting to see, maybe from the professional standpoint, to see how it is there.
You know what? Can we, we'll take a short break while the phone rings and we'll be back right after this. Stick with me here, Kevin.
The following is a message from the 2012 Grey Cup champions, your Toronto Argonauts.
If you didn't hear your voice, there's still time to be a part of next year's crowd. It's okay to pile on. Get your 2013 season tickets today. Call 416-341-ARGO or go to argonauts.ca.
Argo!
You're listening to the Candid Frank Lively Show on Blog Talk Radio. To get involved in the program, to voice your opinion, or even to ask a question, you can call directly using Skype or message Frank Stanishi on Facebook with your phone number, and we'll take that phone number and dial you in. The direct phone line number is 714-242-5250. That's 714-242-5250.
And we're back in, and I'm having trouble getting ahead of him, buddy.
No worries.
Jason, if you can get a hold of him and let him know that we're trying to get a hold of him, I'm calling the number you gave me. Unfortunately, it's not successful, but that's okay. I'll wait for him to call us. I gave him the number here as well, so, he should be able to call. Anyway, so... with the CIS, is your concern only football, or do you have more concerns than just football?
Well, I'm extremely excited for this weekend because we have the CIS Final Eight, which is typically in Halifax, and it's always a great weekend. This time it's moving back to Ottawa. I'm excited to go down there. I'm going to be making the trip to go see some of the games this weekend. It's usually a great event and usually one of the top CIS weekends for in terms of entertainment.
And that would be basketball.
Yes.
And, yeah, that's on my board for those of you that have seen it. It is like the Sweet 16, but it's the top eight teams. Describe the event and what happens and how it works.
Well, usually it's seeded. The rankings is a little more different than, say, the NCAA rankings where you have all the pooling and whatnot. Because it's only eight teams, they break it up. But there's kind of weird rules involved where – two conferences can't have teams playing against one another. So, say, Acadia this year could have maybe arguably been, say, a 7 seed. They don't want them playing against CBU again, Cape Breton, because they already played, so you move them there. Or you don't want you don't want UBC playing against University of Victoria. So it's jumbled that way where teams that might be worse than the other one or fared worse during the season might get ranked higher due to rules. Or McGill this year, who is the Q winner, weren't typically a great team, as the Q isn't one of the stronger leagues in basketball, surprisingly. They must have a top 6 spot when, say, maybe they would have been a 7 or 8 seed because their strength of schedule wasn't that strong.
Now, when it comes, I had the good opportunity to do OUAA basketball and some of these tournaments that you're referring to. The intensity at these games is extreme. As much as maybe the regular season games are a little less dramatic, the Big Eight is a dramatic situation because these are teams that are doing a really good job against their local teams. So it really is the best of the best meeting the best. How do you see basketball in Canada? Is it relative to – there are a lot of good basketball players. In fact, this very year, the best player in the U.S. is Canadian.
It seems like Canadian the dream right now, I guess you'd say, for Canadian basketball is for the next Olympics. I wouldn't be surprised if we see NBA players getting cut from the Canadian Olympic team due to the fact there's so much talent. But we have players like Andrew Whitten, who you mentioned is one of the top high school player in the United States. He's from Toronto. And Anthony Bennett is supposed to be a lottery pick this year. He's playing at UNLV. He's from Brampton. He's supposed to be a lottery pick in this year's NBA draft. And we have players like Tristan Thompson, who are also in the NBA, and Nicholson as well, who are also going to be legitimate talents or spots for the Olympic squad. So basketball is certainly on the upswing. Gonzaga, number one in the United States in the NCAA rankings, they're pretty much Team Canada. They have two or three Canadian starters on their team. So we see basketball making a huge rise in Canada, and this basketball tournament, there's some great talent. We see players from these tournaments go on and play in Europe. I remember Aaron Dornacamp for Carleton. He's now playing, I believe, in the Italian league, and he was a great player when he played, winning, I think, 4 championships with Carleton. Surprisingly, not 5 like most of them get.
Now, so basketball, Canadians are making large advances. Let's go to the obvious now in CIS. Right now, the women are playing their final, are they not?
For hockey, I believe this is the final weekend, and McGill didn't even make the final. Didn't make the finals, which is a shocker. I think they've gone in the last 7 years. They've won the Q,
and they haven't. And they're not there to play the final. It's U of T, coached.
UFT's in there, and X is one of the stronger teams. I know they did really well in the AUS. In the women's league, I believe Calgary has been a mainstay as well.
Now, moving on to the balance of sports, are there any other sports you'd like to let us know and give us an update on?
The University Cup, I believe, is next weekend for university hockey, and that's the one I think that gets the least amount of respect in terms of publicity, because CIS hockey, men's and women's, is very strong, but I feel maybe it's undersided because, especially men's hockey, most of them are former OHL, WHL, and Q players now going on to finish out their years. So maybe people don't see the star power from there, but it is great hockey. It is upper-level hockey. And more people should probably pay attention to that. Try and watch the streaming. I know AUS right now, UNB, who is the perennial power out here, is playing against St. Mary's, who are only a few years removed from a national championship. That'll be very exciting. The Q's been very good in recent years, with McGill winning it last year. And OUA is getting stronger and stronger as scholarships are starting to get better there. And the West, we have Alberta and Saskatchewan, who have been ranked highly all year. And the only game people will probably get a chance to watch nationally on Sportsnet is going to be the University Cup. And I think that's a shame, because the games leading up to it are very exciting. We saw UNB and McGill have a fantastic game in the semifinals last year, where McGill's goaltending just stood on its head to steal a victory. And that's fairly common in that tournament, where players can make big plays. And we see former names, for those who follow junior talent, and seeing them moving on and being successful, not maybe in a professional aspect, but in their academic careers. And I don't feel that CIS hockey gets the attention that it probably deserves, because it's competing with the NHL, the juniors, even the NCAA from a certain aspect in terms of prospect watching. And I think that's a real shame.
Absolutely. Now, there are things that we've talked about before, and I know one of Jason Sperling's favorite subject is minor football. We touched on the CJFL. Let's get down a lower level now, below the CIS, and junior football in Canada. Are there any big changes that have taken place in the past little while? Any highlights you'd like to share with us?
I think from a recruiting model, and it's affecting the talent right now, is because the CIS went to that you have to play 5 years of eligibility in 7, it's kind of hurt the talent in the CJFL, where people might be missing out or skipping that step. And that I think is hurting a bit, where the you know, West had their kind of version of Sage Epps, and they were putting in great talent. If you look at the Smew dynasties, it was pulling out of the CJFL, and great players were coming out there. It was building up the West. And I think that's a shame that 5 years of eligibility to be used in 7 years is really hurting that league. And the CJFL, I've seen great players come out of there. Matt Carter for one, Jordan Lennon another one. We have players who stood on their heads out there, Nick Downey, Mike Benson, players who came out of that league and found roles in the CFL. And I think that's a shame. I find that I think that rule might be reworked to help out the CJFL. The OVFL in Ontario is, right now, I think, the landmark league in terms of minor football. And I think football is getting stronger. And I think the stronger that minor football gets in Canada, the stronger the product will get. And I like that there's more talent, say, from the CIS moving down. to more talent from the CIS in terms of former players coaching and giving back, and I think that's why we're seeing so many gains in terms of Canadian football in the CIS and the CFL.
Well, I've got Leon Castle or Khalil Carter, however you want to refer to him. I tried getting a hold of you, Khalil. I couldn't get you on the phone.
Hey, that is my fault. My daughter misplaced my phone. She was supposed to play games.
It's okay. Kevin, what does that sound like to you?
I didn't really hear him too well. I heard
okay,
that
you know what I'll do? I'll hang up the phone, and I'll try calling you again, okay, Khalil? Okay, talk to you in a second. All right, so now that we've straightened out our issue with Khalil, we'll give him another chance, and we'll call him again and complete the show. So there's a phone ring, and let's see this time. He might answer this time.
Hello?
There we go. We have a winner. Okay, Khalil.
Excellent.
We're going to take a short break, but for a good reason. I want to play something for the folks at home, and then we'll do our little introduction of you. With us here is a young lad named Kevin Garbio. Holy mackerel. Now all of a sudden I can't say his name. But anyway, he's with us as well, okay? I'll just cut the
all
mic
right.
for a second here, and we'll...
The following is a message from the 2012 Grey Cup champions, your Toronto Argonauts. If you didn't hear your voice, there's still time to be a part of next year's crowd. It's okay to pile on. Get your 2013 season tickets today. Call 416-341-ARGO or go to argonauts.ca.
Argo!
Now, this is the part I want you guys to listen to. Listen very carefully.
Intercepted, and this could go all the way. Khalil Carter, inside the 10, touchdown Montreal.
Easy interception. You don't want to play blue marbles, exactly what you didn't want to happen going into halftime.
On his first attempt here, Porter has it. Getting a chance to play today, makes good on it.
From the pocket, and
this one
comes off. What a play
from
Khalil Carter with the interception.
Khalil Carter.
Moss throwing to the wide side. It's intercepted. Khalil Carter laterals. Khalil, you remember those moments?
Those moments seems like yesterday, but I know they were a long time ago.
I was impressed. And anybody who wants to see what that was just me. I just pulled that off YouTube. So, you know, just type in Khalil Carter. And don't be confused. Khalil tries confusing people with spelling his name. It's spelled not only do you have this Leon Sandcastle character – not only do you have this Leon Sandcastle character, who, by the way, is supposed to be a pseudonym for another football player, and you just have to Google it, guys, and get it. I think it's to be honest with you, I think it's hilarious. But I want to spend more time. Listen, I'm sorry about the confusion. I'm sorry your daughter hid your phone on you. We can always do this again down the road and try again. But regardless. It's been a real thrill to talk to you. And now here you are, a former Argonaut, a former Montreal Alouette. You've got two fans of both those teams. Kevin Garbio is a fan of the Montreal Alouettes, and I'm a fan of the Toronto Argonauts. Mm-hmm. And now be honest here, and agree with me. Which team was better to play for?
Toronto Argonauts were the better team to play for. Organizational from the top down, but the guys in the locker room at the Alouettes were just a joy to play with. So I will say it that way.
Hey, Kevin, how do you like that?
Oh, I guess I'll take it.
Very, very well put. For a guy, you know, Khalil, you are a coach now at Drake University, and I really almost want to talk to you about that more than your career. It is a really interesting situation. What brought you to Drake University?
In 2009, I was out of the Canadian Football League, and a friend of mine, a longtime head coach in the Canadian Football League, John Gregory, won a Grey Cup with Saskatchewan Rough Riders, was a mentor of mine, and I promised him that I would play for him before I retired. He had just started an Arena One team up here in Iowa, and I was a longtime arena football player and veteran, and I came down here and helped him jumpstart that team as a player coach. And Iowa was a good, quiet place. Des Moines is a top five city in America, and it seemed like a good fit for me to kind of get my feet wet in the coaching ranks.
And restart your life.
Absolutely, yeah. Coaching is a lot different from playing, I'll tell you that.
So now you end up in Iowa, to give people an indication how important a university, Drake University, is. In 2011, one of the presidential debates happened in that very school. And that was an important day in Iowa because Iowa is a swing state for all you political fans.
Absolutely.
And a real big, important college. And the thing that I totally embrace is the fact that you guys took your team on the road to play a Mexican football all-star team, and it's called the Kilimanjaro Cup. And for anybody that knows the word Kilimanjaro, yes, my friends, they went to Africa to play a game, the first time that a football game was played in Africa. Tell us about that experience.
Yeah, that was right before my time, but the effects of it lingered on throughout our year this year. And, you know, a lot of the guys who were on the trip and the coaching staff are still intact. And it was a life-changing experience to be able to do the humanitarian work that they did in the villages, to be able to bring football to the tribes and the people of that country. And, you know, the Mexican All-Stars just made it that much better. It was just a internationally important and relevant occasion that Drake, you know, sponsored and spearheaded. And I tell you what, that trip to Africa is definitely one of the reasons why we've won back-to-back conference championships. It just gives you purpose.
Let's talk about that. Here you are, a Canadian Football League player, and it's like you just missed the bus. You left Montreal. The team wins the Grey Cup not only once, but twice.
Right.
You come to Toronto, you leave Toronto, the Argos win the Grey Cup. And you're not bitter about it. When we talked about it, you looked at it as a learning experience. Tell us the feelings about that.
Yeah, you know, I mean, it was Argos first. You know, they handpicked me from the Arena League. You know, playing up there was a great experience. I would say it's one of the greatest teams I've ever played for. The environment was really laid back. They really promoted family and friendships, and I think it was a little bit of a mask because behind the scenes there was a lot of stuff going on. Damon Allen was in his last couple of years. The whole Michael Bishop, Damon Allen thing was going on, and you know, the sense of how the Canadians affected the game for the ratios was a big contention point with some of the Americans and at that time. And I'm going to Montreal with, you know, my minor is in French, so I'm a French-speaking American. It just seemed like that was exactly where God was taking me, giving me an opportunity to format myself in another type of cultural mecca that Canada is, in a totally different environment, play some football with actually my rivals at that time. We actually hated Montreal when I played for Toronto. So to be in a locker room with Chip Cox, somebody who I battled for years, and now be friends with him and the rest of those guys, was again, it was life-changing. Mark Trestman helped to kind of bring the whole ego that was Khalil Carter, the people's champ, down to a team player. And we went to the Grey Cup and gave it our all that year, lost in our own home field. And that was kind of tough for me because the year before, the Grey Cup was in Toronto. And so that's two back-to-back opportunities that I missed to play and win the Grey Cup at home. But it's good to see that they did it this year.
Now, as a player, you know, you considered that you had to – you've told me that you needed some growing up to do, that when you were a player, you may have been a little, you may have been looking for that I in the word team, which didn't exist.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of guys from the States have this story of why they weren't in the NFL. My story wasn't very much different, except for where I came from. I came from a very small league in the AF2, making 250, and then I progressed through the ranks. I played for all four major leagues, Europe, Arena League, Canada, and a stint in the NFL. And I kind of was chippy. You know, I was trying to prove myself that I belonged. I was a walk-on in college. I wasn't a scholarship athlete. So my whole football experience was one of me wanting to play the game and wanting something back from it. And again, Mark Trestman taught me that as much as we love football, it doesn't love you back. So what I was looking for was something that the game didn't give back to you. And that caused me to alienate people that I really needed to pursue my interest in football. And I lost all those opportunities. It wasn't until Montreal that I really started to understand what it was. And by that time, I was 33 years old. That was a year of the recession. The salary cap had froze, and 33-year-old halfbacks were becoming a dying breed. And so I found myself out of the game very quickly, right when I had started to get a hold of what the whole thing was about.
But I think the training that you had, you know, when you refer to being a walk-on, basically when it came to football, I'm getting a definition here that basically says you were basically a walk-on football player from one point to the next, to the next, to the next, to the next.
Yep.
And that's probably what made you – go ahead. I'm sorry. Go ahead. You want to
– No, yeah. It made me chippy. It made me see guys who I surpassed talent-wise and with success who had scholarships. You know, and who went to big schools, USC's and the Miami's and the Florida States, and I was as good as better as these guys. But because of those stamps of approval, they seemed to get the nod over me time and time again. And then you turn on the film, there's a disparity between my play and their play at that time, and I felt like that my performance should speak louder than even my character. And so I let those things be what drove me, and instead it should be the other way around. As a coach now, I look for character first and talent second.
We discussed on the telephone, and I'm a firm believer of players who have a career of adversity and aren't lucky enough to get all the breaks become the best coaches, probably because they understand the adversity, and as Trestman explained to you and taught you, that football won't love you back, where it's all about you and what, not in the way that you might have thought, but it is all about you and how you deal with it on the field and in the dressing room. Is that correct?
Yeah, it is. I mean, I've been told so many times throughout my career that football is a puzzle, and you have to fit the puzzle. You can't put a square peg in a round hole, and I think I guess just trying to force it to be that individual and maintain my own sense of a self-made player, and I had given myself the opportunities that had been afforded to me when it really wasn't that. It was really God first, and it was other men that believed in me. As much animosity as Coach Stuber, the defense coordinator around the time, had during my time in the Canadian Football League, he is the one that gave me the opportunity. And so as much as I did have disdain for him, I really owe him my entire experience up there.
And it taught you an appreciation for the mentality that could be driving a player, so that now when you look at the guys that you're responsible for as part of the bigger puzzle of the team, do you kind of see a bit of you and the trials and tribulations that you went through make it easier for you to understand and motivate those players that are depending on your tutelage?
Absolutely. I mean, hunger is something that you can't teach, and I think I had plenty of that, but it's the understanding the concept of the team and what it means to win together and to lose together. I mean, it was games where we lost that I played well in, and I had a bit of a, you know, a fire lit under me that in some way something else should have happened. And so we lose together, you win together, you live together as a team, you grow together, and you learn from one another. And that's what in the end allows for your teammates to be the best man in your wedding, you know, later on in life. And I don't think I have very many of those guys at all because of the way that I carry myself in the league. Now as a coach, I'm all about the whole aspect of the brotherhood between coaches, even with our different backgrounds and educations and experience. It's more of a brotherhood and working toward a single goal, win or lose.
Tell us about your first experience in Toronto. Did you not play for the AFL here in Toronto?
I did. 2002, I was one of the only players that one of my coaches brought to the team there, the Toronto Phantoms. It was an amazing experience. It was my first out of the country experience. I loved Toronto. I immediately fell in love with the country and the French aspects of it as a French-speaking American. I wanted to come back, and the first opportunity that I did have, I ran to it. I mean, I actually remember being at work in a classroom as a teacher, a teacher's aide, and got the call from Adam Rita. And the next day I was on a plane, and I still had my passport from NFL Europe. So I packed everything I had and moved, and, you know, I was up here for the next 5 years as basically a transplant Canadian. And I loved it. And Toronto is one of the most beautiful cities in the world. I think they do things right. The Canadian Football League is such a big part of the country, and I think Toronto needs to recognize that.
Yeah, we have a little bit of a problem in Toronto because of the heavy competition. And, you know, the Argos don't own their home field. They are basically tenants, and they can't run the team like a business. And that makes it really, really hard to succeed. They almost have to win to stay afloat. But we're here to support them. You know, there's a few of us here that believe in the Argos a lot. And hopefully other people will begin to appreciate the game and almost appreciate it as much as you do. Now, so you made the transition from the AFL to the CFL in one city, which sounds like fun in itself. You also had an opportunity to go to Scotland and play football. What the heck was that like?
Rainy. it was very rainy. So it rained all the time. My head coach was Jack McNeil. He was the famous head coach of the Doug Flutie, Hale Murray, with there are some CFL connections in that. The funny thing is, the whole time I'm over there, I didn't know who he was. He was just the coach, and later on I found that out. But you know, it was Braveheart. We got to go to Edinburgh and the places where those battles were fought, and we got to see his legendary or mythical sword, and it was an experience. We became transplants of Scotland. We started speaking the language and using all the slangs and the language of the land. We met a lot of people and quickly became fan favorites, and when we left, I really didn't want to leave. It was such a great experience from a kid who came from an urban environment to be able to go international and play football and really learn.
Did you bring a kilt home with you?
That's one thing I did not gain from that experience. No kilt for me. They don't wear underwear under those kilts, by the way, so I saw my share of that as well.
Oh, great. Now there's an image I'm gonna have to use bleach to get out of my eyes. But anyway, having said that, all right. So you've had Khalil, you've had an interesting life, and we've got quite a few minutes left here. But what I'd like to understand is Khalil the person. You seem to have been someone who has always kicked and scratched to get what he needs. What has kept you doing it? Because you know a lot of people. I don't mean to say this, and I don't mean to put down people in general, but a lot of people give up a lot sooner than you didn't. What drove you?
I just think that I was following some of my heart, you know, and you know, you look at all the things in life that you do when you're growing up and things you're good at, and you know, I've always been a big believer of do one thing really well, and everything else becomes easier because you know how to work towards that goal as hard as you can. And football became that thing to me. You know, I graduated college before I started my pro career. So I got that out the way, and it was a big accomplishment for me. I was the first one of my mother's children to do that, the only one to do that. And after that, it just was like, okay, what is my next level? How more can I push myself? And then again, when I start playing with guys like Michael Bishop, who was a Heisman candidate, and Eric Crouch and Ricky Williams, and I'm on a level with these guys, and I'm actually exceeding and succeeding in ways that they didn't on the field, it just gave me a drive. Same thing with the Arena Football League. You know, I barely had an opportunity to play my first year. I was a long shot, and then I became the first player from that team to go to the professional arena league. And so those little successes kept driving me, and I kept going from league to league to league, and eventually the NFL. I got injured, but the Buffalo Bills didn't draft a DB that year. So it was just those little successes kept building a foundation for me to continue to strive for something. And you know, the middle child syndrome is what I call it. I had an older brother. I had a younger brother. Didn't get all the attention I needed. Didn't get all the nurturing that was there. And so I had to be very independent. And I think that was just like the main driving force for me was coming from that environment of low socioeconomic growth to wanting to be something more than my mother could be proud of.
I think you've done a pretty good job of it. I mean, you know, you've written a pretty good story in your life. You have, there isn't a football league you haven't been involved in. What is the difference? I guess, I mean, it's obvious. What difference do you think people don't appreciate between arena football, Canadian football, and NFL football, starting with, you know, the three of them? What makes them different than each other in your mind?
To me, a training ground. I mean, it's good for linemen, it's good for quarterbacks, wide receivers, and defensive backs. And so they're specialized for those positions. You get a lot of one-on-one matchups, and that's where I really hone my skills in man-to-man coverage and being able to play the motion that comes at you in the Canadian League. So it was easier for me to make the transition to the CFL because the field was wider. The ball would have to be in the air a lot longer, and so I was used to playing in a panic mode in the Arena Football League. To me, the NFL is the best of the best. And so there is no comparison with the other leagues when it comes to the level of talent and also the amount of money involved, which it makes it more of a business, and then the politics come involved. You know, you look at guys who have played in the NFL for a couple of years, and then they go to the Canadian Football League. They don't have the same amount of success. They don't return to their college days. I remember R.J. Todd was an amazing receiver at USC, and he never materialized. He's a great player. He's a great friend, but he never materialized. Even Ricky Williams didn't do as well in the Canadian Football League. It is its own league with its own rules, and it is form-fitted for players who can adapt under pressure to the elements of the weather, to different environments with the Canadian fans, and to embrace the culture that is Canada. And so I think they each have their own unique sports, which is why they're their own leagues and their own sport. You know, indoor soccer is different from outdoor soccer. Hockey is different from lacrosse. So this is all animal. People try to lump football together in one category. That's not fair for the Arena League, the Canadian League, and the NFL. They're different sports.
Which one of those games, let's say you didn't get hurt, because when Buffalo drafted you, you got hurt, and then they sent you to Scotland to basically supposedly to develop your game. If you had a better opportunity, was your style of play suited to the NFL? I know that's not a fair question, but I can't help but ask it.
I think my game was suited for the Canadian League. I mean, I wasn't the physical player that they have in the league because they try to move me to safety because I'm 6'1", 200 pounds. So I was a big corner. I was a cover guy, but I wasn't as averse to playing cornerback because I had only been playing it for like 2 years. So I wasn't Darrell Revis by any means technically. I just had a knack for the ball. And so going to the Canadian League and playing the motion and playing the space, I was very well suited for the Canadian League. I could tackle. I was good on special teams. And you have to do that as an American up there. So I think the CFL was very well suited for me. The NFL might have been a little bit more than I would have been able to be successful at, even though I could have been a contributor. And guys tell me, you could have been Ed Reed, and you had skills like Ed Reed, and you could have been Darrell Revis. And I don't know about that. Maybe with time and the right coaching, I could have been. But I know very well that 17 starts and 11 interceptions and 4 touchdowns in the Canadian League is a pretty good representation of how well I adjusted to that league.
I'm amazed when someone says to me that, you know, I had problems with you know, the I in team doesn't exist. And yet you don't have a single bitter bone in your body. I really have to congratulate you on that. You are very level-headed, and I can see why you'll make a good coach. Now, we've got a few minutes left, and I really would like to talk about the team that you're coaching right now. Tell us about the team you're coaching right now, the fact that they won back-to-back, and the division they play in, and the kind of players that you see developing there that maybe may come here to the Canadian Football League. Do you give them any advice like that?
Yeah, absolutely. Drake University is a private university. It costs about $40,000 a year to go there, so our kids have high GPAs, high ACT scores, and their parents can afford to send them there. We're non-scholarship, so everyone on our program sacrifices and commits to go to Drake and play football. We play in the Pioneer League Football Championship with teams like Butler and San Diego and Jacksonville, where Harbaugh came from. He was in the Pioneer Football League and went at San Diego before he went to Stanford. And that league is made up of the same kind of students. It's a bunch of great, intelligent, family-oriented kids who choose to play football in that league. And so we won back-to-back conference championships, which hasn't been done in like 30 or 40 years at our school. And now we have an automatic bid into the playoff structure of the Division One AA, which will give our school that much more exposure and momentum into establishing ourselves as a viable football school, because they'll say non-scholarship, hey, you guys are the little brothers of Division One AA. But our kids sacrifice like everyone else does. And with me being a Drake, with the kind of kids that I have, it's the perfect education for me in coaching to be able to relate to kids who don't share my ethnicity. The majority of our kids are white. They come from affluent backgrounds. And it's a great lesson for me to learn on how to motivate players who may not be as athletically inclined as some schools that may be in D2 or Division One. So I have to really work and know what I'm doing coaching-wise, perfect my craft, but also build these relationships with people who may not share my ideals. And it's been an amazing experience so far to have success that quickly. And I'm hoping that translates to more jobs. I mean, I heard Ottawa was coming back. Desjardins is the general manager. I would love to come to Ottawa. I was supposed to go there after my first year in Toronto when John Jenkins got hired. That fell through. And so being in Ottawa would be an amazing opportunity for me. I just hope that God leads me to that opportunity.
And you know what? It's not only a school that is culturally uniform. The coaching staff is as well.
Right. Right. I'm one of the only brothers on the staff is what I call it. But they've been so gracious. They've been so gracious to me. They rely on me and my professional experience to tweak things. They call me the swag coach to get guys energized and relate to them and understand what they have going on in their lives. They know I've been there. They know I've been where they're trying to go, some of them. And I got my degree before I started playing. So I did cross my T's and dot my I's before I began that journey. And that was important for me as a person. And so we have a couple young men who can play in the Canadian League. I've talked to a couple teams about a couple guys. And I do tell them that, hey, football is great. You know, but that degree is greater. And so they are all committed to the academic portion as well as our coaches and our administration. Academics first, football second. And we've all developed a spiritual relationship based on those principles.
Well, when I read about the school, that's what popped into my head, is that it's a great training ground for the Canadian Football League, because these are players who are playing the game to play the game, not the business.
Right.
It's nothing to do with the business. Mm-hmm. It has to do strictly with the game. They pay their own tuition. Sounds familiar, doesn't it? I mean, you know, the
Absolutely.
CFL, pretty much that's what the CFL is when you really, you know, when you melt it down.
Right. Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, when a Canadian salary, minimum salary is around $40,000, those guys are sacrificing a lot, especially those guys who have wives and children, to play that game and earn their stripes and eventually get to a level like a Kevin Iben where they're getting a quality income from football. And I played with those guys. I bled and sweated with those guys. And, you know, they're remarkable individuals. They have a lot of pride about their league. And it's contagious. You know, we all love the Canadian Football League, and I never, ever thought to compare it to any other league. It is its own league, and genuinely, it is traditionally just remarkable, the type of talent and the kind of people that they breed out of that league. And when you leave Canada, you leave there with a sense of belonging, you know, and ownership of your life and where you want to go from the success that you have in a league like that.
Yeah, we like it here, too. When I was doing my research, and this is the part I liked. Now, not only do you pay to go to school there, not only do you pay to go to school to play football, they also have courses on coaching there. Tell us a little bit about that.
You know, they it's more like you have these opportunities for. To get a degree in coaching, because they don't have the coaching degree, but they have these clinics and these specialized departments that specialize in enhancing someone's progress towards coaching. You know, Drake is diverse in every way. They don't have the normal stipulations that a university would have, like with registering for classes and competing or large class sizes. They've really structured their whole curriculum to the student so that he can have the most success and an intimate relationship with the people that are teaching them. And I think that's a basis for coaching. If you don't know who your players are and your players don't know who you are, then it doesn't work. Like when I first started, they told me the players don't care how much you know until they know how much you care. And that's what Drake is all about.
What would you want people to know about Now we're going to have some fun, okay? I'm running. I got to get into this before it's too late. This guy Leon Sandcastle, what the heck is that about? Why are you doing that? You know,
everybody has seen the commercials and they know who Leon Sandcastle is. Like I said, you know, a lot of people compare me to, you know, a Deion Sanders of the Arena Football League and the way I play the game in Canada. And, you know, the film doesn't lie. But with my players at Drake, I have fun with them. I'll put the pads on every now and then to kind of jump in there and do things with them. And they can see I still can play at a certain level. And so when I saw that commercial on Super Bowl, it automatically put me in a nostalgic effect of I probably could do it too if I really, really put my mind to it. But my body's telling me no, and football has passed me by in so many ways, except for my cognitive. And I believe that's the best way I can continue to contribute to the game is my experiences and my knowledge of all the different leagues and teams and coaches. I played for 14 teams in my career, and all of those coaches, probably about 10 different coaches, they all had different philosophies and things. And the whole Leon Sandcastle thing is a way of me just to have fun with the overall multitude of my experiences. You know I could play still if I wanted to. I just choose to let the younger guys have it because they have a different idea of what the game's about than I did.
You know, you are an interesting person, I'll tell you that. Tell us a bit about your personal life and your goals. I think you've hinted at a couple already that you'd like to expand your coaching here into Canada. How long do you think it'll take you making people aware that you want to be a coach? And will you be changing just from being a backs coach to maybe a defensive coach? Or when do you see you making yourself advance that way, taking on more responsibility?
I'm in coaching school right now. That's what I feel like. I feel like I'm getting a great education here at Drake and coaching from a bunch of great guys who are spiritually driven. We don't curse. We don't use profanity. We don't allow kids to drink but one night a week after the game. So that whole structured way of doing a football program is very helpful to me so that I keep those values as I move forward. But also, you know, I need to take my time in making sure that the things that I know about the game and that I'm teaching the game will translate and relate to anybody that's playing football. And so I have a master's that I'm trying to get. It'll take about another year and a half. So I feel like during that time frame, I'm going to continue to just progress academically as a coach and as a student, and then just spiritually as a person as I move through this program and with this program, that I can only be better. I've talked to some teams. I would love to get up there for a coaching clinic in the summer. I've talked to Toronto about that and Montreal at some lengths. You know, Kent Austin's in Hamilton. I would love to go up to Hamilton and be a part of what they got going on up there. And so I think it's really not on my timeline. You know, I've always followed God's lead, and he's put me in great situations. So when the time is ready, I know he will give me the nod to go ahead and give it a shot. And a lot of people in Canada that remember from my playing days, because I was very ingratiate to the fans. And so I think that they would love to see me come back. I would love to reconnect with Damon Allen and a lot of my fans from Toronto and Montreal and really just give the CFL another dose of Khalil Carr, but this time a more mature, focused, you know, and family-oriented guy.
Now, you obviously feel that you've made a lot of changes in your personal life. And as far as a football mind, obviously your experience is on defense. Obviously you like it in the backfield. Where do you see the position that you wish you had to learn more about? Like if you weren't on the defensive, you know, like you referred to yourself as a tall corner, what other position would you have loved to have explored, knowing your character and your drive?
Yeah, I played quarterback for my first 3 years in the Arena League, so I was kind of a Cordell Stewart slash kind of player where I played some wide receivers, some defensive back, played quarterback. I think quarterback was something that was always my passion, and so making the transition to defense was defensive back was easy because I understood his reads, I understood the timing, the clock in his head, you know, and the overall organization of plays that an offense would try to get on certain downs and distances. So it kind of made me a coach on the field to be able to understand what a quarterback would know. But if I had to choose a position, because I played receiver too, I didn't like to get hit. I like to be the hammer, not the nail. But quarterback would have been it, you know, to have the ball in your hand every time, to make things happen, to be trusted in as a leader. Because when you move to defense, you're not really a leader. You know, Deion Sanders wasn't a leader of his team. He was looked on and counted on in certain positions to go out there and execute. But the leader always comes from kind of a more prestigious position than cornerback. We give up a lot of touchdowns. We have very few interceptions at times. And we often are the reason or the reasons why a game goes the way it goes. But quarterback too. But quarterback would have been the position for sure.
Yeah, you're in on the defense, and especially as a cornerback, you're in the position where people don't notice, like a referee, they don't notice you until you make a mistake.
Right.
Until the guy's running down the field towards the end zone. Then everybody knows who you are. That's
70 plays a game, and you can give up two touchdowns out of 60, 70 plays, and the other 68 you can do excellent, but those two plays can haunt you all week.
It calls for a special kind of mentality, doesn't it? Being a defensive player?
It does. Short memory. We call it short memory.
Short memory.
Tough skin.
So you got that. That's the key to being a good defender is, you know, do the best you can every play. Don't let the last play bother you.
That's right. That's right, because the next play could be the play that changes the game. And we have opportunity a lot more time than a lot of players to affect the game because of the passing league that is the Canadian Football League or the Arena League or now even the NFL. That ball is in the air 50 times, you know, and this is, you know, kind of the old Khalil talking is, please throw the ball at me 7 times a game. I guarantee you I'll make a play on one of them.
And that's the one thing about defense. It's the big play. We're going to play I want to play some Khalil highlights again. If you missed it the first time, you're listening to Blog Talk Radio. This is the Candid Frank Live Show, streamed on Rouge Radio. Khalil Carter, otherwise known as Leon Sandcastle, on Facebook to his friend.
And this could go all the way. Khalil Carter inside the 10.
The interception. You're the Winnipeg Blue Bombers, exactly what you didn't want to happen going into halftime.
On his first attempt here, Porter has it picked off. And it's Khalil Carter. Getting a chance to play today. Makes good on it.
Congratulations, Coach. How does this feel?
Feels good. It's something that I share with our organization, our coaching staff, and our players. But it was a great year for us. It was a magical year that ended on a nice note.
You mentioned your players. How much of an impact did they have in your role as a coach and getting you to this point right now?
Well, they had it's a players' game. And we always tell them that. They're the ones that sell the tickets. They're the ones that people want to watch. They don't want to hear me talk. And they're the ones that make this happen. The assistant coaches are behind the scene, and they're organizing the whole thing and getting them in the positions to be successful. But this game's all about the players.
What do you think separated you from the other two finalists?
I think either one of them were more than deserving. What Coach Hofnagel did, with Kevin Glenn for majority of the season, I thought was amazing. Mike Benavides having to follow in Wally's shoes. That's as tough as it gets, and he did it with class, and they were a dominant team all year, so I think this could have gone to anybody.
103 come champs, you got a new contract. What's next for Scott Milanovic and the Toronto Argonauts?
Now we're just going to get back to work and try to get our guys ready for that first game.
What are some of the challenges you faced heading into 2013?
Well, I mean, there's always going to be change in your roster. We've lost some guys. We've picked some guys up, and just finding that mold that we found last year and where guys fit and what's the best way to utilize them. It always takes time.
Is there any pressure for you to repeat?
For me, there's always pressure to win the Grey Cup. That's our goal. And I don't worry about the fact that it's a repeat. I mean, it's another year, another chance to win a Grey Cup. So we focus on the day-to-day jobs that it takes
Hello.
To get there in November. So
we're still on the air. Hang on.
Thank you, Coach.
Bye.
All right, that was Scott Milanovic. You had a chance to be coached by Tressman.
I did, yeah, I did. Tressman is an interesting guy, a very smart guy, and he had a lot of success in the CFL. I think he also had some growing as a coach to do when he came to the Canadian League, and I think he left the better because of it.
Now he's moved on, and obviously, like you say, he's learned a lot. Now, you knew Milanovic as well, did you not, for a bit?
I did. Scott's a great guy. You know, he's really quiet. He's really focused and driven, hard-working guy. Really like Scott. Really took a liking to him when I was there. And I'm glad to see that he's having the success that he has because he really deserves it. He really works really hard, and he treats people with respect and dignity. And I think that's a great recipe for success in the Canadian Football League, especially with your Americans.
Now, tell us, obviously you gave us the short form of what makes him such a good coach. What else do you think is a quality that you would take from him to bring with you and put in your suitcase or your toolbox of coaching?
Yeah, people always say in coaching, teach what you know. You know, and Scott was a good quarterback when he played in college, and I think he played some Arena Football League as well and was in the NFL. And I think from the quarterback position, he understands how to attack a defense. And you have to do that. There aren't a lot of defenses you can play in the Canadian League. There are various ways to blitz and add pressure. But the main coverages are match and man and three double cut and maybe a little cover two if people are that daring to do so. So I think he understands that. He's also been in the league long enough to know the guys who are coaching against him because the CFL is a kind of a revolving door. Coaches go from one team to the other, and he has a good understanding of the personnel that's out there and the coaching philosophy that are out there. So I think he's successfully been able to diagnose his opponents and attack them in ways that he's had success when he was with Montreal, because much of their offense was similar to the offense that they ran in Montreal when they won the Grey Cups, where a really quick back like Avon Coburn, Chad Kackert, a quarterback who can throw the ball a ton, and a defense that bends but doesn't break.
Absolutely, and he hasn't given up being a quarterback because he's known for calling all the plays.
Right, and they're better for it. I mean, in Montreal, you have Covino, and he does a lot. And he had Ricky Ray, so half of that responsibility is on a great quarterback. I remember the first thing he did was get Ricky Ray in Toronto. He knew exactly what he needed to be successful, and he went out there and did it, and that's a credit to him because there are teams still right now that are dealing with quarterback issues after many years of not being able to be successful, and he went out and did probably the best deep ball quarterback in the game.
You know the situation last year with the Argos. Were you following the team close enough? And were you aware that Corey Boyd was released while he was leading in rushing?
I was, yeah. Corey wears my number, so we talk a little bit from time to time. And I'm a big fan of his, but I think he had that Will Carter syndrome. It was mainly about him and, you know, getting back to the NFL and proving himself and not really buying into what the team was about. And that's a quick way to get you off a team. You look at a guy like Anwan Stewart, who's been one of the most unselfish Americans I can ever think of in the Canadian Football League, and he stayed on one team for a long time, had a lot of success, and that's one of those guys I look to as the model for how you're supposed to have a Canadian Football League career.
Now, what advice would you give the Toronto Argonauts, since you're experienced in repeating, to repeat?
You have to get better at the skill positions. I mean, you know, they do a good job of running an offense that's hard to stop. It's that zone read, quick hit, take advantage of people trying to come up and play man-to-man on second downs. Get better, get as many skill position upgrades as you can from the other leagues. I mean, the Arena League is a veritable paradise of wide receivers who know how to use their motion. and get open. And I would use that. They've gotten a lot of defensive backs from the Arena League, like Lynn J. Shell, like Kenny Wheaton played in the Arena League, Jeremy Yanira for Toronto, and they had a really good relationship with Arena Football in the past. I would say tap into the Arena Football League, get some guys who can run the motion at receiver, cover the motion at defensive back, and maintain as many of your free agents as you can. It's often been said that people take $20,000 less to stay in Toronto because you play in a dome and not subjected to the elements as much, and the city is such a great city. I would like to see them, you know, challenge that notion that they can bring high-priced free agents to Toronto and still make it work to be able to repeat, because it's going to be difficult. It's very difficult to repeat.
Khalil, thank you for the time you took with us. Khalil Carter, former Argo and former Alouette, and now he is the coach at Drake University. He coaches the Drake Bulldogs. They, of course, have repeated twice champions. Congratulations, and thank you for the time you spent with us.
Thank you too, Frank, man. God bless, and hey, go CFL. Love you, Canadians.
See you in Ottawa next year.
I hope so. Desjardins, give me a call.
There you go. He speaks French. Talk to you later, my friend.
Thank you.
The following is a message from the 2012 Grey Cup champions, your Toronto Argonauts. If you didn't hear your voice, there's still time to be a part of next year's crowd. It's okay to pile on. Get your 2013 season tickets today. Call 416-341-ARGO or go to argonauts.ca.
Argo!
Thank you for joining us tonight for the Candid Frank Live Show, heard on Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays from 10:30 to 11:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on Blog Talk Radio. Have a great night, everyone. Don't, yeah.